Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Morning. The mist has left the greening plain. The dewdrops shine like fairy rain. The coquette rose awakens again, her lovely self adorning. The wind is hiding in the trees, a sighing, soothing, laughing tease until the rose says, "Kiss me, please, 'tis morning, 'tis morning." With staff in hand and careless free, the wanderer fares right jauntily. For towns and houses are, thinks he, for scorning. My soul is swift upon the wing, and it's deep a song I bring, come love, and we together sing. When the silence isn't quiet, feels like it's getting hard to breathe, and I know you feel like dying, but I promise we will bring the world to its feet. We'll move mountains. We'll rise up. We'll rise up like the day. We'll rise up, and we'll do it 1,000 times again. Thank you, Andra Day. It is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jefferson Smith sitting in, honored to do that. It is brisk democracy autumn. And I say brisk not only because it's cooler outside than it was during hot democracy summer, but also because it's quick. In terms of before the election, it's like a month or 6 weeks. It's one of the reasons why I focused so much and talked so much when we were together before about hot democracy summer. Because if we're ants, not grasshoppers, if we spend those sunny days, those sunny weeks of hot democracy summer, we will have a better hot democracy, a better Britain. We'll have a better hot democracy summer. We'll also have a better brisk democracy autumn, and less likely for it to be a fall. We're in the middle of debrief. We now know that the stuff that we talked about on Friday, when I was looking, it hadn't been announced yet, but I was looking at what was happening in Nevada. It seemed pretty clear, and we're not criticizing the organizations that were being judicious. Right. Fortunately, it's not my role. Nobody's relying upon me to make projections and calls, so I don't have to be quite as judicious. But it seemed pretty clear what was happening in Nevada, and that bore out. We're still waiting on what happened and what's happening and what's going to happen in the House. And we will be debriefing this election, both briefing it, like what's still happening, but also looking backwards. The call-in number line, by the way, here is 202-808-9925, 202-808-9925. 9925. What are we looking ahead towards this week? There's going to be some announcement tomorrow. Donald Trump has said on the 15th he's going to make an announcement. It's going to make his supporters happy. He said that before the election. Before an election when he thought his supporters would be going into that conversation happier. Does he do the same thing? Does he do what pundits were predicting he would do? That's an interesting question. What else are we looking ahead to this week? We got some House races to look at. What are you up against? What are you dealing with? What's something you want a fresh start on? What is something you think our nation needs a fresh start on? You know my rap. You know that my pitch about this is our first time together. Welcome. Thank you. But for me, the best way, maybe the only true way to love America is to understand it as a redemption story. What are the things we can do better? What are the ways we can improve? As we think about this brisk democracy autumn, as we think about this time of debriefs and postmortems have three legitimate purposes. Probably two of funerals, too. One, just reckoning or celebrations, marking the time, acknowledging that something important has happened. What are we missing? The question I have for you, any local elections that have potential ripples for beyond your locality, even if it's just a ripple of what we could learn, model piece of policy, model campaign strategy, model candidate profile, anything we can learn that you were working on, something that you spent your brisk democracy autumn or your hot democracy fall on. Excuse me, hot democracy summer. I can't even remember the name of seasons. It's Fresh Start Monday. I need to fresh start my brain. So first, reckoning and celebration. Second, legitimate purpose. Taking stock of what we've learned. What happened yesterday or last year that can help us tomorrow and next year? What worked well? What should be done differently? We discuss nationally, so open to that. Been all kinds of criticism in the last 2 years in the election from lots of progressives criticizing the current president. There's also been some praise. The president, probably the first one to say, wasn't all him, it was most of the candidates, most of the country. It was other drivers, it was legitimate threats about democracy. Not only legitimate threats, but actual attacks on women's rights, human rights. But nonetheless, what have we learned in all of this? What have we learned that inspires us, or what do we want to change the future? And then third, resolving what we need to do next. What went well, what differently mentioned that, but what are next steps? What legislation, whether it's our 10 things in 10 years, or at least one thing that we're going to work on, that we're going to commit to, each of us. That'll be the same thing. As Thoreau said, as I've said before, we're not here to do everything. We're here to do something. So what's something we can do now? What's next? What are we going to do to make things a little bit better? What are we going to ask other people to work on? There are interesting pieces of possible news coming out. One thing I might want to talk about later in the show is what's going on with the Elon Musk lawsuits. I'm actually curious, and not because I'm merely a star watcher or merely a class warrior, because what might those lawsuits teach us about the shape of our economy, the shape of our democracy? We talk about what Mike Pence had to say about Donald Trump. It's interesting what's happening now, right? It's interesting that after the midterms, and it's of course intentional, because what happens if you are a loyal Republican and you have tolerated Donald Trump, in fact, you've bristled under his leadership, you've heard people say incorrectly, in my view, that Donald Trump is driving everything in the Republican Party. I think people are scared to challenge him. I don't challenge that. But I've been saying for what, 6 years? That this guy is not the head of the snake, he's the rattler. I don't mean he doesn't have power. If you're president of the United States, you have terrific power. If you have the biggest bullhorn in conservative politics, you've got significant power you are helping to guide. If it's a multi-headed hydra, you're one of the heads, to be sure. But a convenient narrative in cocktail parties in Washington, D.C. and in New York and beyond is, oh, Republican Party is fine. It's just this. It's just this Trump guy. Where'd he get it from? Where'd he get it from? He's been reading treatises and writing speeches, considering the future of the nation, and he emerged like Wonder Woman from clay, formed, ready to announce what has to be done, or he learned it from what it takes to win a primary now in the Republican Party. What have we learned? What do we do next? What do we still need to celebrate or come to reckoning with? This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff. We're here with your calls. It is brisk democracy autumn. I know we could say, like, cool democracy fall. But there's a question of how cool it's going to be. It's a lot cooler than some of us thought it would be. And fall, you know, sounds like kind of a bummer, maybe. Autumn sounds maybe more pretentious, but not necessarily a bummer. Let's go straight to the phones. Let's go to, I think it's Louis. Could be Louis. How you doing?
Hey, my friend. I hope that we don't make the mistake thinking that we all have to get rid of Trump to have the daylight forthcoming to America. We have a greater monster to worry about. Not only is he mean-spirited, he's got brain, and also he's heartless. We got to keep an eye on destroying the entire Republican Party, because the next one that's going to be forthcoming is going to be the undesirable DeSantis. This man has no limits of what he will do, and he has brain. And Trump is nothing but, as we used to say in the military, you know, empty drones make the loudest noise. So those dumbass can get ready to get drifted again by Trump, and then DeSantis will put the nail in the coffin if we're not careful.
What I appreciate what you said. And is it Louis? Did I pronounce that? Do you pronounce your S? Or Luis?
Yeah, however you please. We're not going to have any misunderstanding how you pronounce my name, because we still care about America, man.
All right. I want to give you the respect that you deserve, but I appreciate it. Where I really agree with you is there is a tendency, right? What's the old line that ideas are for larger minds, events are for the medium-sized mind, and the personality is for the smaller mind. And I don't use that in terms of the human being. I each of us has our own broader mind and our own smaller mind.
Yes, sir.
It is easy to latch on. It's one of the reasons why, in advance of any military operation, it is useful for to target an enemy and to boost up how bad that individual is, right? It builds the will.
Right.
And it's easy, right. But where I agree with you very much is, as I said in the opening, right? We know Donald Trump didn't start this fire, right? We know that that somebody else will pick up the flag. What we have to do is win the idea of democracy. What we have to do is win the idea of compassion. What we have to do is win the idea that we're stronger together than we are apart. What we have to do is win the idea that economy works better when everybody works better. What we have to do is win the idea that we have an obligation to our planet and we can't just melt it. We have an obligation to, what we have to win is the idea that women get to control their own bodies and have agency over their own lives. We have to win these ideas within a supermajority in the country, a transpartisan coalition in order to do it. And that isn't merely about one politician or even one election. Louis, last word.
Yes, sir. If I may say something.
Please.
Hello?
Yeah, no, go ahead. Last word.
Here's the problem. Here's what you have to worry about. The press is going to create the impression that there's a division between the Republican Party, when in fact they're going to coalesce at the end of the day to still try to give us the business. You know, the caveat of what we're fighting for is to save American democracy. Let's not fall asleep that these clowns are going to be fighting against each other. They're all grifters. They're all anti-American. They're all subhuman characters. They don't represent anything that what America represents. I mean, to be honest with you, we really don't have no use for this party, period. Because that's not what America is about.
Well, let's leave it there. And I really appreciate the call and appreciate everybody's call. And the call online is 202-808-9925. Where I really agree with you is there is this risk of a narrative, right? There's a risk of a narrative. And this is a narrative that will be comfortable for lots of mainstream media. because it is very uncomfortable. Mainstream media doesn't like, what doesn't want to say that, I mean, it's very uncomfortable for anybody who went to journalism school or anybody who's trying to be a journalist who didn't. It's really hard to say, you know what, there is one political party in the country that is pro-democracy. There's one political party in the country that is pro-middle class. There's one political party in the country, or one of the two major political parties, that is pro-science and pro-facts. It's very uncomfortable to say that. Because everything you're trained on is to be fair and balanced. And I don't mean it in the Fox News way. And if you're to be fair and balanced, everything I just said, that doesn't sound very balanced, even if it's fair and accurate. If any of the things I said risks accuracy, oh, geez, imagine the stress that causes somebody at the New York Times, much less CNN. So it's much more comfortable if you can blame it on a rogue actor. You can say, no. We're still in this world. Remember, okay, we're still in a symmetric world. There's still like two political parties that are trying to make the country better. They just have different views. And therefore, it's just this orange weirdo. So let's just focus our attention on the orange weirdo, and you get him out of there, and then everything will be back to how it was in like the 1970s and 80s. Except it's not. We've had a big sort. Parties are different now. They've sorted out much differently. We're more divided, not because the Democratic Party's gone off in the toolies, it hasn't, but because the largest funded effort ever in the history of humankind to take over political party has been successful. It has transformed that political party. It has evolved that political party from something vastly, something Abraham Lincoln would not recognize, something the Whigs would barely recognize. But that's very uncomfortable. It's much more comfortable than to have a narrative. Ah, see, what we've been telling you is you have this orange weirdo. And now the good and decent institutionalists of the Republican Party are finally going to rise up and oust him now that he's lost some elections. Now, I do think there's a chance that there will be there is a growing sentiment to rid the Republican Party of their putative figurehead, most recently elected president leader. I do think there will be greater resistance to him. It is an interesting and important thing to watch. But where I really agree with our caller is don't mistake that drama. Don't mistake that internecine court politics to be the same thing as a transformation. When Josh Hawley says, oh, let's start something new. All you have to do is read what Josh Hawley writes, and then you know what he means. And the only definition of new is who gets to wear the crown. But I don't want a monarchy in the first place. Whoever wears the crown, I want a democracy.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman Book Club, and today we're reading from What Would Jefferson Do? And this is from the chapter Warlords, Theocrats, and Aristocrats Rise Again. The subchapter, Theocrats Attack Democracy. And the epigraph that we started the chapter with is from President Abraham Lincoln, where he said, I am approached with the most opposite opinions and advice and by men who are equally certain that they represent the divine will. I hope it will not be irreverent of me to say that if it is probable that God would reveal his will on such a point so connected with my duty, it might be supposed he would reveal it directly to me. The subhead of the chapter, America is a Christian nation. No, it's a nation where a lot of Christians live. And I read about Judge Moore and his Ten Commandments thing and his statement that, you know, America was founded in Christianity, and then proceed to share the founder's actual view on this. Our founders were both well-schooled in the history of the Crusades and knew from firsthand experience with Puritanism how oppressive religious men could be, even with small amounts of political power. Ben Franklin fled Boston when he was a teenager, in part to escape the oppressive environment created by politically powerful preachers. And for the rest of his life, he was openly hostile to the idea of a secular power being wielded by those who hold also religious power. Although he was fascinated by the spiritual experience, Franklin had little use for the organized religions of his day. In his autobiographical Toward the Mystery, he wrote, quote, "I have found Christian dogma unintelligible. Early in life, I absented myself from Christian assemblies," end quote. In his autobiography, Franklin talks about how he came to this way of thinking, quote, "My parents had early given me religious impressions and brought me through my childhood piously in the dissenting, in the Puritan way. But I was scarce 15 when, after doubting by turns of several points, as I found them disputed in the different books I read, I began to doubt of revelation itself. Some books against deism fell into my hands. They were said to be the substance of sermons preached at Boyle's lectures. It happened that they wrought an effect on me quite contrary to what was intended by them. For the arguments of the deists, which were quoted to be refuted, appeared to me much stronger than the refutations, and I soon became a thorough deist," end of quote. Franklin, like most of the more well-known founders, was a deist, subscribing to a philosophy made popular by Unitarians who held that the Creator made the universe long ago and has since chosen not to interfere in any way, that neither Jesus nor anybody else was divine, or alternatively, that we are all divine, and that there is only one God and not three. Another founding deist who resisted giving political power to those with religious power was George Washington. Jefferson's diary entry for February 1, 1799 reads, quote, "When the clergy addressed General Washington on his departure from the government, it was observed in their consultation that he had never, on any occasion, said a word to the public which showed a belief in the Christian religion. And they thought that they should so pen their address as to force him, at length, to declare fidelity whether he was a Christian or not. They did so. However, Jefferson noted, the old fox was too cunning for them. He answered every article of their address, particularly except that which he passed over without even notice." Jefferson concluded that Washington, quote, "never did say a word on the subject in any of his public papers, and that Governor Morris, a close friend of Washington's, has often told me that General Washington believed no more in that Christian system than Governor Morris did," end of quote, from Jefferson. In fact, President George Washington supervised the language of a treaty with African Muslims that explicitly stated that the United States was a secular nation. The treaty with Tripoli, worked out under Washington's guidance and then signed into law the next year by John Adams in 1797, reads, quote, "As the government of the United States is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion, as it has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of Muslims, and as the said states never have entered into any war or act of hostility against any Muslim nation, it is declared by the parties that no pretext arising from religious opinions shall ever produce an interruption of the harmony existing between the two countries," end of quote. But for the founders, this wasn't just an issue of being Christian or not. They didn't want any organized religion mixing its functions with government. For example, on February 21st, 1811, President James Madison vetoed a bill passed by Congress that authorized government payments to a church in Washington, D.C. to help the poor. Faith-based initiatives were a clear violation, in Madison's mind, of the First Amendment doctrine of separation of church and state, and could lead to a dangerous transfer of political power to religious leaders. Caring for the poor was a public and civic duty, a function of government, and should not be allowed to become a hole through which churches could reach and seize political power or the taxpayer's purse. Funding a church to provide for the poor would establish, in Madison's words, a legal agency, a legal precedent that would break down the walls of separation the founders had put between church and states to protect Americans from religious zealots gaining political power. Thus, Madison said in his veto message to Congress, he was striking down the proposed law because it helped a church to, quote, "provide for the support of the poor and the education of poor children of the same," which Madison warned would be a precedent for giving to religious societies. That would be giving federal funds. Now, things have certainly changed since then, with the faith-based initiative program that started under Reagan has now exploded. But anyhow, the book is What Would Jefferson Do?
Let's go straight to Rob from Colorado Springs. Go ahead, Rob. Colorado Springs, the center of the Christian right, geographically at least.
Yeah, and the Air Force Academy.
That too.
Real quick, I think one of the takeaways that I got from the election is that we need some election reform in some of the states, especially the western states, like Nevada and Arizona, because, my gosh, we're 6 days after the election. We're still counting votes slowly. And I think it's just a good example of what a quagmire mail-in voting can be. And I think it's kind of a real big issue that we're still waiting for a week after the election to get results.
I know that's what Carrie Lake is saying, right? I mean, I know a bunch of conservative activists are saying, see, well, you can't trust the election. I mean, and it's funny when they're talking about Arizona, because they've been running that show for a long time, including clerk's offices, secretary of state's offices, et cetera. But what are you worried is lost? Let's say it took 3 weeks. Okay, let's say I'm thinking back to college. When you'd take your final exams, and then, or heck, law school, and then you'd figure out your grades like in the middle of the next term. Now, I wouldn't want it to happen in the middle of the next term, because we have to know who's going to be in charge. But that doesn't happen for another couple months. What do you think is lost? Like, other than our inability to, like, celebrate or cry, our ability to have a sensible radio show, or other than our ability to, like, eat our Oreo right away rather than delay the eating of our Oreo, what do you worry is lost by, if we had to wait 3 weeks?
Well, I don't think anything's lost, and I'm not insinuating that there's corruption or anything. I just think that if 49 states can get their election results, or 48, whatnot, within hours, you know, what's going on in Arizona? What's the problem? What's the holdup? And by Arizona's own admission from their officials, it's mail-in, the way that they do their mail-in voting and allow mail-in ballots to be turned in on the, you know, up until the close of the polls on election day. And, you know, I just think it's ridiculous. I just think there needs to be some reform. Of course, that'd be on
But you're saying, well, we've got to fix it. But I'm still trying to understand what's broken.
Right.
I'm still the fact that it takes longer. Okay, well, it takes longer. But what is, because I could flip that, right, and say, I mean, Arizona, I do think there's some execution issues, right? I think, like, Oregon has all vote by mail, for instance, and it doesn't take as long. But if something's really close, it does take longer. And that's part of where we're at, right?
If things are really, really close. Yeah, Oregon was done, you know, what, the next day?
Yeah, but we just had, like, I'm still not sure if the Salinas race has been finished. Has been announced, although it seems like she's going to win. It's still really close. It might have been announced last night, but there's still, like, when elections, and even if you look at those other states, they're saying, well, they're all decided. If you look at the number of ballots counted, right, you'll see, like, New York Times or wherever, it'd be like the arrow sign, 95%, right? Over 95%. Doesn't say 100%. Like, it actually takes a while to get all ballots counted. One of the reasons why it can be slower is when stuff's really close. Now, Arizona, I do think that people who have not been in love with democracy, people who have not been in love with vote by mail, people who aren't that competent county clerks, I do think there's some reason why you should have pro-democracy people in charge of county clerk's offices and running county clerk's offices and doing better execution. I agree with that. But what I want to challenge on, and thanks for the patience, folks, with this topic, is, so I will say, I don't think vote by mail is the final answer to everything, but I do think it's useful, because I value vastly more everybody having a chance to vote. I value vastly more every eligible voter having a chance to cast their ballot, even if they're busy, even if they work two jobs, even if they got to pick up their kids from school. Even if somebody trying to suppress votes is closing down polling places, and so they have to drive further, I value vastly more them being able to get their ballot cast than I care when I learn. The second thing I care about is the count happened accurately. I want to make sure that each of the ballots that are cast are counted accurately. I care about that vastly more than whether I go to bed on election night still a little nervous. right? Or they wake up in 3 days, or we're doing a show when we thought everything would be known and we are still figuring out some of what should be known. That's like fourth or fifth of what I care about most. I want everybody to vote, and I want us to count accurately. If that takes longer, it doesn't bum me out. What am I missing, Rob?
No, I think you're right. I think everybody wants a ballot accurately tallied. I don't think anybody is against that, and I'm 100% with you on that.
Awesome.
Just feel like that it would be a lot nicer if we knew the results of the election.
It would be nicer.
A lot sooner.
I would enjoy it way better, for sure. It'd be way nicer. But, Rob, thank you so much for the call.
Yeah.
Be well. Doug from Martinez, California. Go ahead.
I'm still hoping the Democrats will hold on to the House.
Yeah.
But if the Republicans do take it, I have a plan B.
Okay.
A coalition. All the Democrats in the House, and they'll have a slight minority, be joined by the anti-MAGA Republicans. And added in, they will have a majority. This coalition will have the majority. And the anti-MAGA Republicans will join in, because they and the Democrats are all going to vote to elect as Speaker of the House Liz Cheney.
I think the Liz Cheney idea is an interesting one. I think it's an interesting one, and it reflects something interesting, which is the biggest piece of truth that I think we can talk about on this subject is how weird it will be, how important that weirdness will be to have a House representatives that is decided by fewer than three votes, which I think that feels pretty likely, right? I mean, it feels pretty likely that nobody's getting 222. And here's a fact. So just the turnover in Congress, in the last Congress, was 16 members. One died before taking office, and shout out to Aaron Fritschner. Five died in office. One indicted and resigned. Three left to join the presidential administration. One was appointed lieutenant governor of New York. And five resigned for private sector jobs. That's 16 in a single Congress, okay, in 2 years. So that means you divide that by halves of year. You know, that's like four every 6 months. And that means if you have fewer than four, you're not going to have a majority. There's a risk you won't have a majority that lasts more than 6 months. There really is that risk.
Go ahead. Who would you rather have in there, Kevin McCarthy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because that's who's going to be it. No, yeah. I say Liz Cheney.
If you're a Democrat, if Republicans have 219, 220, 221, right? If you're a Democrat, it makes all the sense to try to find any Republican who, and name them Speaker, or any number of Republicans who'd be able to support a compromise Speaker. Absolutely. And by the way, same thing for Republicans if Democrats have a vote or two higher. It's one of the, but it's tricky, and I'll say why. So when a legislative chamber tends to have, and this Congress is one of them, tends to have things they call procedural votes. And for procedural votes, they have procedural votes, and they tend to have traditions, almost rules.
Interrupt you real quick.
Oh, no, wait. Let me say this.
Yeah.
That when you have those procedural votes, what party membership means is going with the party on a procedural vote. If you don't, and by the way, who you pick as party leader is not a procedural vote. If you pick your party's leader to be the chamber leader, that is a procedural vote. That is the kind of vote that if you don't do it, it is tantamount to exiting your party in the minds of your colleagues. So that means any anti-MAGA Republican you're talking about would actually be, in the minds of many, many Republicans, turning in their Republican Party card. Now, there might be somebody willing to do that, but it might only be in exchange for them being Speaker. Take the last word. We're about to go to break.
Okay. Well, if it does flip midterm, do they re-vote for a new Speaker of the House?
No, that already happened. I was just using your comment as a launching pad.
With Liz Cheney, who would put the Constitution, our democracy, rule of law, and put country ahead of party.
Yeah.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Free Speech TV from Rio Rico. Richard.
Hey, I want to rebuttal the gentleman that talked about the Arizona voting process a little bit.
Great.
We have 294,000 indigenous Indians live here. They own more of the state than any other state in the union. And a lot of these people still talk their native language. And PBS did a really good expose on this, how it took hours sometimes to drive to their house and interpret these ballots to these people. And they speak, they didn't tell how many different dialects. So it's a complicated process, and I just appreciate if some of those folks would just sit back and relax a little bit.
All right. Appreciate
it. Let this play out.
I appreciate it. All right. You be well, Richard. Yep. Paul from Lucerne, California. Go ahead, Paul.
Not true. They don't just cultivate power.
Not just.
Democratic Party. I'm in the Democratic Party, okay?
Sure. Yep.
And we register people to vote. Well, where I live, Republicans don't work and play well with others. So they've been kicked out of every venue we have to register people to vote. They're not allowed to canvass to register people to vote.
Yep.
They're not allowed to do anything but meet in their little club.
Yep.
That's it. Yeah, they're not allowed to play in public no more. They've been ostracized. Okay?
Yep.
So the Democratic Party, we register people at events, at fairs and stuff like that. We register everybody.
Yep.
Okay.
I've been there, done it.
You come to our table, we will register you to vote. Now, the Republicans are only people that don't pay for the registration. They don't pay us. Everybody else will pay us, but them. I don't care. We register people to vote.
Yeah.
We don't. We are the party of democracy.
So I want to amplify your point. The difference between, and I'll get into it. I'll look more up and I'll get more into it. The difference between what California and New York did, but unilateral disarmament in New York, and it was an important move. And we should probably get more into details of what New York did, because it's going to decide the House, that's for sure. And I appreciate you pushing back. And I want to be careful with what I say. When I say that political parties' purpose is power, I don't mean that. I got to be careful, because it's only partially what I think. The essence of a political party is the essence that its people give it. And if its only purpose is power, nobody's going to join. But you build the power, and at the same time, you build the political party in order so you could win. And therefore, no entity that is built for an objective can be trusted in all virtues, including the great associations that any of us can ever be a part of. I hear friends criticize the United States, and sometimes progressive friends will criticize the United States. And sometimes they're criticizing the United States, but sometimes they're just criticizing power itself. So when I say the political parties are organized around power, it is not trying to weaken them. It is to, and I got to be careful not to overstate, it is we make sure we
put the onus on ourselves to make sure the political party to which we belong is in fact virtuous. We're grappling with this debrief, this what have we learned and what do we got to do next? Go ahead, John from Kansas City.
Well, how come nobody ever said anything about the Catholic Church? And they're behind all this stuff, reproductive rights, abortion, birth control, stem cells, and nobody's saying boo about the Catholic Church.
When you say nobody, who do you mean?
On the news or the press or anything. I think Biden's a Catholic. Mm-hmm. That might be one of the reasons. But one of the big instigators is the Catholic Church. They mm-hmm. lobby. They spend millions and millions of dollars. They preach against reproductive rights. And nobody says boo about it. And you never hear anything about the Catholic Church. Nothing.
Yeah. So I'll say a couple things. First of all, I'll agree that one of the most important drivers of, obviously the most important driver of anti-choice ideology and political power in this country is evangelical and Catholic power, and Catholic is critical. My quibble is, my bigger context. Anytime I hear, when I have the honor and privilege of sitting in this chair, that nobody's talking about blank, change it just a little bit and say, well, maybe not enough people are, but certainly some people are talking about it. In fact, what we know, for instance, is that the Detroit Archbishop, there's a story in the Detroit Free Press right now, a couple days ago, that the Detroit Archbishop required Catholics to fast, give alms, and do penance after the Proposal 3 passed in Michigan, after the pro-choice proposal, the pro-women's rights proposal passed in Michigan. And that was covered. And I don't live in Michigan, and yet I got that news. But so when you say nobody, but you're right that understanding the impact that religion and certain religions and certain interpretations of certain religions are having our politics is critically important. It's hard to overstate it. To the extent that criticism of the Catholic Church is lower than maybe it should be, and I don't know, it seems like there's been a lot. It seems like there have been movies and a lot of lawsuits. It seems like Catholic Church has been taken on the chin a little bit. That some of why there might be a little bit reduced announced vigor, might be because of the president, but it also might be because the Catholic Church, because Catholics are one of the most important swing voter constituencies there is. When they talked back in the day about Reagan Republicans, there were a few different types, but one of the biggest types are Catholics who, when they would listen to the pulpit, their pulpit would say, help the poor, which kind of sounded like vote for Democrats, and don't let any women have abortions, which sort of sounded like vote for Republicans. And so it might be that there is a concern about alienating. There's also just generally a concern about talking too much about religion. It scares us, right? Not supposed to talk about politics or religion. And in progressive circles, very often it's really nervous. People are nervous talking about God. It's more comfortable to talk about. In the Republican Party, you can talk about God, just say yes, do what God says. Progressive circles, what are you supposed to say? Well, kind of, sometimes. I am a little more comfortable talking about it. I think it's important we talk about it. I appreciate you bringing it up and making us talk about it. People are talking about it, probably should more. And here's Judy from Sun Lakes, Arizona.
Hi there. One of the things they definitely need to learn is patience. I'm calling from, are you there?
Oh, I'm there. I'm listening to you. Okay. And I'm in rapt attention.
Okay, wonderful. Anyway, so calling from Arizona, and the thing that happened here in Arizona, which has not happened before, is that mail-in ballots, which has been around here for decades, that in Maricopa County alone, I want to say it was close to like 180,000, 200,000 there were more than 180,000 or 200,000 mail-in ballots that were dropped off on election day rather than mailed in, which has never happened before.
Yep.
So there's that. And a lot of those ballots are still in the process of being counted. And the races are just so close here. I mean, we've got the for the supervisor of education. I mean, at the last I looked, there were like 600 votes between the two, and it's been flipping back and forth, literally day to day. And so it's just taking longer. I do have to commend the Republican recorder because he is a sane Republican of integrity, and he's yeah. been as open as one possibly could be about it. But it's just going to take time. So one of the things we need to learn is patience.
I appreciate it, Judy. And I agree. We had that caller said, we've got to get those votes counted faster. I'm like, to me, the most important thing is everybody gets to vote. Every eligible voter gets to vote. That's the most important thing. And the second most important thing, it's all counted accurately.
Yeah, and that the vote gets counted accurately. Yeah. So it's in process, and it's just so close that it's going to take whatever time it takes.
Amen. And if it takes me a little longer to open my presents Christmas morning, then we have to wait a little longer. That's okay. I've had to learn that my whole life. Thank you so much, Dwight. We got a minute. Go ahead.
It's not how long it takes to count the votes. Instead, it's how long it takes to hold an election. America is the only country in the world where it takes 2 years to hold an election.
Yep.
And that's where the shenanigans comes in out there. If there's any corruption, that's where the corruption comes in right there.
Dwight, I appreciate the comment. I'll criticize for sure, and I'll partially blame Buckley versus Vallejo. In a more sensible world, we would have expenditure caps, not just contribution caps, expenditure caps, and time limits on campaigning so that didn't occupy our whole lives.
Tom Hartman here with Tom Hartman University Book Club. Today we're reading from Unequal Protection, How Corporations Became People and How You Can Fight Back. This is from page 218. The subhead is, if corporations are persons, why aren't there crimes in the crime statistics? Every year, the Federal Bureau of Investigation issues a press release on its Uniform Crime Reporting Program, which determines the nation's crime index. It reports crimes by persons, which excludes, strangely enough, corporate persons, even when the corporations have been convicted of felonies. In its entire history, the FBI has never issued a report on crimes by corporate persons, although its reports on crimes by human persons are well-researched and well-publicized. The upshot of this is that when you ask people how most money and property are stolen or how most people are killed, they think of burglars and muggers and bank robbers and crimes of passion. They think of human persons. The reality, though, is that more money and property are stolen by or lost to corporate criminals than to human criminals. Russell Mokaber's corporate crime reporter noted that in 1998, when the FBI estimated robberies and burglaries at almost $4 billion, the cost of corporate crimes was in the hundreds of billions, as it is every year. These include security scams that ran around $15 billion that year, car repair fraud that hit around $40 billion that year, insurance swindles and corporate fraud found on your health insurance, HMO, and hospital billings that runs between $100 and $400 billion a year, 100 times greater than all the burglaries in the country combined. Then there are the occasional really big crimes, like Neil Bush's savings and loans scandal that then-Attorney General Dick Thornburgh called the biggest white-collar swindle in history, or the actions of banksters and defense contractors that get no investigations whatsoever from either the Bush or the Obama administrations. More people die as a result of corporate activity than because of the actions of deranged killers or overwrought spouses. According to the Corporate Crime Reporter, the FBI reported that the 1998 saw about 19,000 Americans murdered at the hands of other people. But that same year, 56,000 people died from work-related diseases like black lung and asbestosis that went unreported by the FBI. And many times that number died from the silent violence of pollution, contaminated food, hazardous consumer products, and hospital malpractice. Much of the human death caused by corporate activity has arguable benefits. For example, the many cancers caused by compounds associated with plastics or pesticides. But the cost of these deaths isn't factored into the unit cost of the products. So there's no financial incentive for industry to develop toxin-free or toxin-reduced alternatives, or to use the more expensive but less toxic alternatives that already exist. This is a product or process, excuse me, known as internalizing profits and externalizing costs. The corporation profits from the toxins, and the public pays for the cancers, both in healthcare costs and lost productivity from sick and dying workers. It's been a standard operating procedure for centuries and was pushed back against for only a few decades in the 1960s and 70s with the consumer movement that came out of the publication of Rachel Carlson's book Silent Spring and Ralph Nader's book Unsafe at Any Speed. Since the Reagan administration, however, dumping externalities on the public has become a common and accepted practice across the business spectrum. One of the easiest ways to do it is to simply move the toxin producing or toxin using factory or process to a company with to a country with lax environmental and labor laws like China or Vietnam, so that not only are labor costs lowered, but more importantly, the cost of dealing with externalities like workmen's compensation from injury and exposure and toxic emissions and death in the workplace, so that all those costs drop to zero or close to it. And then there are the big mistakes. In 1998, one of America's largest meatpacking companies replaced a refrigerating unit on one of its processing lines. Shortly thereafter, the detectors it had in place on the line to look for the deadly cold-loving bacteria like Listeria monocytogenes started to react, indicating high levels of bacterial contamination. The company's response was immediate. Carolyn Smith DeWall of the Center for Science and the Public Interest told reporters Russell Mulcaber and Robert Weissman, quote, "Then their studies started coming up positive, so they stopped testing." This company's Fourth Amendment right to privacy blocked surprise inspections by the government. They're a person, right? The detectors were apparently turned off for a full month before the Centers for Disease Control frantically tried to find the source of the bacteria that was killing people, mostly children, all over the United States, used DNA fingerprinting to track the bacteria that was causing the nationwide outbreak of Listeria back to the plant, provoking a nationwide recall of millions of pounds of the product. But during that month, hundreds of people consuming this company's products were sickened by Listeria, and 21 humans died from it. U.S. Attorney's Office, according to Mulcaber and Weissman, said, quote, "There was insufficient evidence to bring a felony charge against the company. Instead, the company paid a $200,000 fine and issued an unprecedented joint press release with the Bush administration's USDA that managed to say that the company had paid the fine without ever mentioning the brand name of the product that had contaminated and caused the deaths." This is truly amazing. I mean, this is corporate crime costs us more and kills more people, and we don't even talk about it. It's amazing. The book is Unequal Protection, How Corporations Became People and How You Can Fight Back.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Lewis in Portland, Oregon. Go ahead.
Hey, Jeff, one of the main things that you and the Catholic guy, because I'm a recovering Catholic myself, platforms or connections to the Poor People's Campaign is exactly that. When they talk about moral revival, they're clerics and laity who are getting together to show how much we have common in this country. So that was one answer. You asked the question he did, Poor People's Campaign. There are a lot of Catholics in that. Second, real quick thing, if I remember correctly, Elon Musk fired 4,000 people the day before Election Day or on Election Day. I saw it on OPB, I believe, on PBS NewsHour, and also or on Democracy Now. And then he hopped on Twitter and tried to convince us to vote for Republicans. Wow, that's all I can say, Jeff. That's all I can say.
Dave, from is it Traverse City?
Yes, Traverse City, Michigan.
How you doing? Go ahead.
Northwest corner, it's beautiful. I'm doing great, and as Tom says, I'm going to get better.
There you go.
Okay, recovering Catholic myself.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church has lost credibility in the eyes of many of us Catholics because the Church has changed their position on abortion so many times.
Mm-hmm.
For several hundred years, it was quickening, and that meant when the mother felt the child, that's when the child got its soul.
Yep.
So abortion could happen up to that time. St. Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century said, oh, no, it's about, I don't know, I think it was 15 or 20 weeks for boys. And get this, oh, about 30 weeks for girls. That's when they got their soul. They didn't get it at the same time boys did. Of course, back then, we know why. But anyways, I know those are at least two times the Church has changed their position, Jeff, and I think there's been a couple others.
You know, David, it's an important point. I'll tell you what it makes me think about. Is, and this is so dumb, I just apologize in advance, this is so dumb, but it's maybe not only dumb. Abortion is really hard. It's really hard. And that has policy implications. It's hard for the Catholic Church to figure it out, of trying to regulate. Well, it's really hard. It was hard at the Supreme Court, Roe versus Wade, it was hard. I went to the Museum of Science and Industries exhibit on gestation of a fetus and the birth of a baby. I looked at all the stages, and I looked and I said, well, if I were in charge of the universe, and I was supposed to pick at what point, you know, which of these images on the way, they were 3D models, the fetuses in development, which one do I say? I couldn't do that. And that is why, for me, rather than trying to play the Catholic Church game, that's why, for me, I got to trust the mother. The mother and their doctor. That's what I got to trust. Because I know I can't figure it out. I know that that is not a moral place where I will get it right more often than I'll get it wrong. I don't need to make it my place. And I don't, well, I could go on, but I appreciate the call. Lisa, go ahead, from WCPT and Afraid of Me.
When we had I can't remember what it's called, the procedures that you go through before you get married to, you know, in the Catholic Church. Anyway, so, you know, their stance at that time, this was, you know, a long time ago, decades ago, but nonetheless, I probably still feel the same way, is that the semen is a gift from your husband, and you are to welcome any children as a gift from God. Well, I am not a broodmare, and I never wanted children. I knew from when I was just a little child, I never liked baby dolls. I never wanted children. So to me, this is kind of akin to a sin to tell women that they should not only not get abortions, but should not be using birth control because God believes that her role is to become a mother. And I also have a huge issue with people that stayed Catholic through all of the horrible things that have been dug up, all of the abuse, et cetera. I would think that people would try and find another similar religion and dump the Catholic Church until they change their beliefs. And especially, once again, this whole idea that, you know, you should welcome a child and not use birth control. That is just horrible. It infuriates me no end. And this whole thing that the Republicans are trying to do is just to set women back, try and turn back the clock and make this country into a theocracy, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think there's the fundamentalism at the root of the modern Republican Party. Let me put in the good news. The good news is the majority of the people are with you. Okay, the majority of people are with you, Lisa, that don't think, and in part because the vast majority of the country is women, right? I mean, like, you have a slight majority of the country is women, and a significant majority of the country thinks that women shouldn't be broodmares, to use your term.
And
appreciate your call. So there's the good news. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Clay from Vicksburg, go ahead.
Hi there, Jeff. Since you mentioned abortion, I just wanted to point out that it seems to me quite clear that if there's no functioning brain, then there can't be any human life.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why it's such a confusing issue. You know, a heartbeat doesn't make a life. You have to have a functioning brain in order to be a living human.
Yeah, no. Drawing that line, and that's and this is a place I try to tread pretty humbly, I will admit, and maybe that's cowardice. It's at least in part cowardice. Hopefully, it is also at the root of better humility, which is recognizing our own. What is it? Is it Socrates? The only thing I know is that I know nothing. Hopefully, it's at the base of the humility is not merely cowardice, but
what I know is I'm not qualified to draw the line. That's what I know. And I don't feel qualified morally. I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel qualified biologically. I don't feel qualified scientifically. And I think there are people who are also not qualified. My critique, and the reason I'm willing to dance with the issue at least a little bit, is that I think there are people who think they do have that authority, biologically or morally or religiously or scientifically, and I think they probably don't. I think they might be as big a dopes as I am, and they shouldn't pretend that they've got it all figured out, because I don't have it figured out. Doesn't mean nobody does, but I don't, and I think there are some other people who are kind of like me. I will say, though, to those who come after the Catholic Church en masse, it is a good question. Imagine you're a Catholic of conscience. Right? My wife is, to use somebody else's term, a recovering Catholic. I grew up Presbyterian, and my dad's side of family was LDS. But imagine you are a Catholic who listens to this program, and you read the New Testament, and you think that we need to be stewards of the land, and you think that human beings need to cure the sick and help the poor, and that we should measure ourselves by how well we take care of the least of us. And you see a church that is a huge institution that is committing sins. Well, if you're Martin Luther, what you do is you start your own church. Right, and you're not thinking about argument is not about abortion, but you start your own church. If you're a modern Catholic and you care very deeply about, and the essence of much of your morality is you care very deeply about people, including women, including children, what should you do? And I heard the caller say, "Well, they got to get out of there. They got to get out of there until they change their ways." Again, I'm not qualified to say the better move is get out of there, or the better move is to build for the kind of Catholic Church that manifests the best human values, the best faith values, the best values it can. I guess I would say that. We've got just a minute left, and I'll be back tomorrow, for good or for ill, hopefully for good. I deeply appreciate the time. And what I think we ought to learn, a couple things I think we ought to learn from this election. One of them is a little bit of humility, a little bit of humility about our prognostications. I think a little bit of our humility, I think we need to learn some humility around how much we think we should try to regulate women's lives. And many of the callers here, of course, have that humility already. Humility that we always know the answer if we're critiquing whoever's in charge of the Democratic Party. You know, humility in our critiques, I think, power should be humble as well. Humility isn't the only thing, however. We also got to be bold. I appreciate you so much. You're priceless. The coalition of the benevolent irrational. Without you, democracy is not possible. With you, we got a chance. And yeah, you're priceless. Definition of priceless, worth a lot, not for sale. We'll be back tomorrow. This is Tom's show. This is your show. I'm Jeff. Be well.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.